Public hearing on House Bill 2812, Jerry Wright and Joe Buehler. Welcome, gentlemen. Who wants to start this off?
Start off, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Wright, representing myself in the local 290. I think this is a real simple little bill. I can do it without a whole lot of conversation. If I look at those statute numbers that are in this bill, we have on line 9, we've got 446, which is manufactured dwellings. We have 447, which is half of the plumbing statute. 460, which is elevators. 479, which is electrical. And 480, which is boilers. We left out half of the plumbing statute. So all we're doing is adding the other half of the plumbing statute that we need to
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm the administrator of the Building Codes Division. We support the licensing law from a compliance standpoint, deal with violators, take those issues to the board for resolution. This matter, as Gary has described, is, I believe, simply an oversight. That section of statute was not referenced. This will provide the division with the tools it needs to deal with chronic violators who currently can simply include civil penalties in the cost of doing business, and if their license is revoked, simply surface as another entity. So we would respectfully request the committee's support in moving the bill forward.
Any comments, questions? For the public hearing on 2812, open up the work session on 2812. The chair would move 2812 before with a due pass recommendation. Comments? Objections? Order. Carrier. Senator Starr said he was carried. Open up a public hearing on Senate Bill or House Bill 2819. Joe and Tom. You might as well just stay out there. Okay, Tom, I'm going to introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Lundberg. I'm the chairman of the Oregon State Board of Boiler Rules. I have three little bills here together that basically clean up statutes. And one of them, or the first one, 2819A, addresses a problem that we ran across during a compliance case, where we thought we had a certain authority, which was we thought we had suspension authority or the chief boiler inspector in an emergency, and he did not, as the opinion of the AG. So 2819 adds that language to statute so that in the event of a state safety problem or an incompetent inspector, they can be suspended until the board meets and has a revocation hearing.
Hey, Joe.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm the administrator of the Building Codes Division. In the interest of brevity, I'm going to say what Tom said.
Very good.
There you go.
Question. Close public hearing on House Bill 2819. Open up the work session on House Bill 2819. The chair would move House Bill 2819 to approve due pass recommendation. Comments? Objections? So ordered. Okay, well, let's see. I guess I'll just carry that one. How about that? All these three, you guys are all right. Open up the public hearing now on. There's a 2822.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Lindbergh, chairman of the Oregon State Board of Boiler Rules. 2822 is one of those ideal statutes where we're making less law. They currently in Chapter 480 ORS, we exempt certain pressure vessels as the law was or is now. The exempt vessel is further defined in another chapter. We think that's redundant and unnecessary. It's covered in the plumbing rule, and 2822 is to remove that entire chapter from statute.
Very good. Question.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Brewer, Administrator of the Building Codes Division. I'd just like to applaud the efforts of the Boiler Board to work on some regulatory reform and eliminate this unnecessary section of statute.
Very good. Questions? Public hearing on House Bill 2822. Open up the work session on House Bill 2822. Chair moves to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Comments, objections, so ordered, and set of an order. I think he's our designated.
I think he's the guy that would love that.
Mm-hmm. He's our designated character. Anything that does away with any law. And now we open up public hearing on House Bill 2824.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Lindberg, Chairman of the Oregon State Board of Boiler Rules. Continuing in our boiler cleanup, 2824 is to redefine the definition of automatic utility water heaters and make sure that certain companies understand that if a water heater is used for space heating, they still have to have the proper safety equipment. It is not uncommon for contractors to use this. This is the only thing that came up in the House side that caused some question. It was merely a misunderstanding. The gas company and all contractors have agreed, and there was no opposition.
Okay.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm the Administrator of the Building Codes Division. This bill simply corrects some ambiguous and confusing language, allows the board and the division to take its compliance actions in a more straightforward and coordinated fashion. So the board respectfully requests the agency respectfully requests your support for this bill.
Okay, and the committee amendments in the House that prohibit the installation of a water heater without a safety device. That was the key thing.
It was clarifying that safety device is required even though the particular vessel is exempt under other statutes. If it's used for a different use.
So you have to have a safety device?
Yes.
That's the crucial thing. Any further questions? Close public hearing on House Bill 2824. Open up work session on House Bill 2824. Chair moves House Bill 2824 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments? Objections? Sorry. I can carry that one. Hey, we gave you the one before that. So
yes, I heard that. I'm thrilled. Thank you.
Okay. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2826. And we have John Grace and Joe Brewer again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Gervais, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association. We requested House Bill 2826 to remedy a small problem, and it hasn't been a very controversial sort of remedy. What we have encountered is small corporations, electrical contractors, and this also impacts other boards and building codes agency, when they receive a civil penalty, they're required to use an attorney to go for the public hearing or for the electrical board itself. And contractors are very proud of their record and want to keep a clean record. And oftentimes, while they'll spend their own time, if they have to add an attorney, usually the fees or the civil penalties are around $250 to $500, depending on the severity of the incidents and activity. What this bill is to do is simply allow the corporation to represent itself at a public hearing or a contested case hearing, rather, and before the board, if they choose to appeal. Like it saves money for everybody, and it's common sense, and ask for support.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chair, you may have noticed I'm not actually Joe Brewer, but I'm Jim Hanson. I'm the manager of the Regulatory Services Section for Building Codes Division, and the division's here this afternoon in support of the bill. As John has stated, and I'll echo, this allows small contractors who have incorporated for whatever purposes to appear and represent themselves in administrative hearings where otherwise simply would not be cost effective for them to hire legal counsel, which they're currently required to do.
we had an example of a contractor in Pendleton that just happened to mention the chair's reference. There's an unusual situation where a electrical contractor hired a trenching contractor and told him to put in conduit in the airport project a few years ago, and the state hit him with a big penalty. Well, we weren't supposed to put in the conduit, but I felt that the electrical contractor should have given wise counsel to the trenching contractor hired, and so we found the contractor basically guilty of the violation on a $1 fine. But that person spent a lot of money with attorneys before it got to the board.
Okay.
On penalty over this.
Any questions?
Any comments? Well, it sounds, though, Mr. Chairman, a little concerned about this for, I don't know if you're actually bringing this to the right committee, because what you're doing is perhaps limiting the business opportunities for attorneys.
This committee is not without representation. I see a couple of
attorneys.
All of the reasonable attorneys, I don't think they would want to feather that.
Sounds like
I'm going
to try. Where are we? Further the questions. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2826. Open up work session on House Bill. Okay, we're going to move House Bill 2826 forward to pass recommendation. Comments? Objections? So ordered. Thank you. I probably
ought to have this one.
Oh, sure. Okay. I need help. Joe, before you leave, is there anything I should know about your meeting in Carlton on Friday night, the building code? This committee has been very interested in the building code.
Mr. Chairman, we met with approximately 30 people on Friday night, listened to questions, clarified some of the responsibility of the Building Codes Division. Most of the issues arose around privatization, trying to service larger areas outside municipal boundaries. We explained that in the case of Umatilla, for instance, if they wish to annex the, I don't know if Umatilla can be characterized as having a suburb, but the surrounding area, if they wish to annex that, that needs to be done through an intergovernmental agreement with Umatilla County, and the state doesn't play a role in that. But we did surface a few issues that we're going to work on, standardizing standards for plan review, trying to clarify what the requirements are to raise fees, so forth and so on. So it was a very good meeting, well attended. Unfortunately, Representative Butler couldn't get there until about 8:30 because I believe he was in the debate over Senate Bill 700. But I believe he was pleased with the outcome. It was a very amicable meeting and came away with a better understanding of the differences between the two different parts of Oregon. And the folks made it clear that what works in the valley doesn't necessarily work over there. We're going to try and keep that perspective when we deal with issues, Mr. Myers.
Well, thank you for going out and taking the time to do that. I know a lot of concern over some of the bills we've passed out of this committee, and hopefully you cleared up all that.
Everybody can go home now.
Pendleton anytime I get
okay, very good.
Next question is,
yeah, very good.
Thank you.
Looks like some of this is from the garden.
I guess so.
I think you've just been defamed.
I know. Wow. Wow.
Controversy.
Well, I guess so. Okay, where are we going to get on the next one? Open up the public hearing on House Bill 3218. Who do we have here? He's coming for us.
Shame, I don't tell by his name.
No, Libby Henry and Larry Cable, is that right?
I'm worried of the camera.
And Bill Linda, well, geez.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, we have to behave ourselves. He's really going to start this out.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Bill Linden, representing the City of Klamath Falls, and here today to urge your support for House Bill 3218. Fortunately, I know very little about the actual substance of this bill, so I'm going to turn this right over to Ms. Henry.
Hi, I'm Libby Henry, and I represent the Eugene Water and Electric Board, and we're one of a number of publicly owned utilities, principally municipal utilities and PUDs. They're asking for clear authority in law to use this particular instrument for making wholesale power purchases. Mr. Cable, that I have here with me today, is the attorney that does these kinds of transactions for both municipal utilities, PUDs, and the City of Klamath Falls. And so we'll ask him to walk you through what these transactions look like and exactly why this is a desirable provision to have in law for us. I would tell you, though, before we even ask that this bill be introduced, I shopped it and shared it with the Treasurer's Office, the Finance Community, the PUC, Department of Energy, all of the utilities and all the utility customer groups, and I received no opposition or show of concern from any of them. So it's our hope that we've come to you with a complete and clean copy of the bill that you can support. So with that, I'll give this to Larry Cable, and he can talk to you about how this all works.
Welcome, Larry. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Larry Cable. I'm a lawyer for the various public utilities and consortium for the City of Klamath Falls in regard to the Klamath Falls project. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the chance to testify. What this bill is intended to do, at least in my view, is to clarify what municipal and public PUD utilities are authorized and what they're not authorized to do under law. And the reason that it's important to clarify is that as the wholesale market has developed and then deregulated in the purchase and sale of electricity, electricity is now purchased traditionally and normally in a different way than it's been in the past, and I just briefly explained it. But the point of the bill is to allow publicly owned utilities to enter into transactions regarding the purchase of power whereby they buy financial instruments to limit the exposure to price variations and risk. The most obvious example is that if a public utility determines that it will buy, say, 10% of its power on the open market, and the market price during the month during which they would be making that purchase could vary between, say, 6 mils and 75 mils, they would be able to purchase a financial instrument that guarantees that the price will be no more than 22 and no less than 20. Now, they might at the end of a month do worse in terms of the total amount of money that they paid for that amount of power, but they have fixed the price between those parameters, thereby avoiding a situation where if they buy on the open market, they can get into a 75 or 200 mil type of price. It is to allow them to do that in connection with the purchase of electricity that they're otherwise authorized to purchase, that is electricity necessary to meet their contracted load. I think it makes clear also in some of the subsequent sections of the legislation that they are not authorized to purchase power or these financial instruments for the purpose of investment of surplus funds. We're not talking about that, both kinds of transactions. It is to fix the price and limit the price risk in connection with whatever portion of power they may buy from the market. And I'd be happy to answer any questions or in connection with the public records exception, which is the other part of the bill in both instances, it has been our experience in terms of doing these transactions that when you try to tailor the kind of financial protection, the cap and the collar that you want, it requires that information be given to the financial transaction people in connection with the kind of load that you want to buy the protection for, which involves load characteristics and other aspects for private entities that you serve, that those entities would prefer not be made generally public because it has to do, for example, with how they operate their businesses or their mills in reference to and give information that they would not normally give out. I would say that this is not in any way intended to say that once the transaction is completed and you pay 20 cents or 21 cents or 30 cents for the financial protection, or you swap the variable for a fixed price, that that contract would be unavailable to the public. Once the contract is executed, it is available, and what you have paid is available, and it's also available through your cost of service analyses. It's simply to try not to be required to make generally available to the public proprietary information in connection with the entities that you serve until the transaction is completed. That's the idea.
You were talking about the limitations. Just could you kind of go over that and explain that again?
The limitation and what creates the concern here is that any kind of a municipal entity, or, and frankly, in my opinion, any kind of a private entity, would take money they had in their surplus funds and go about buying some kind of a financial instrument from the Fed, going long or short, that the electricity market would go up or down, thinking they know what they're doing and believing they can earn money by that prospect. The kind of transactions that are here authorized have nothing to do with making or losing money. It has solely to do, as we say in the legislation, with eliminating variations and price risk in regard to electricity that you are purchasing. That is the sole purpose, and that is the limitation, and that, I think, clarifies the law, as I say, hopefully both in regard to what you can and what you cannot do.
Okay, I was just thinking, pass this bill out, I know that Senator from Ashland will have some concerns about how Ashland might use this. Well, that's what I was trying to get to.
Right.
Unusual.
Well, in terms of what is intended, we do some work with Ashland as well. This in no way authorizes the city of Ashland nor the city of EWEB or any PUD or whatever to go out and buy electricity or electricity futures for the purpose of making or losing money. That's not authorized. The transaction has to be in connection with the purchase of electricity that is required for load, and it has to minimize the risk in regard to market price fluctuations. It has to meet those requirements, or they're unauthorized to do it.
Can you give an example of how that actually would work?
Well, if you, let's say that you have a, and this is, let's say that you have a public utility with 100 megawatt load, and they're going to buy 70 megawatts from Bonneville, either that's all that's available or all they think is fair to buy. And so they're going to buy 30 megawatts on the market. When you go into the market, you have to pay, you have to make that decision, and you're going to pay at the Cobb interchange point or whatever the market is at that point in time. And so before you make the decision to go into the market as opposed to buying more Bonneville power or making a fixed price purchase, if you presume Bonneville power was 24 mils and you presume the market by your best analysis is going to vary between 6 and 35 during the particular month in question, what you do before you commit to meet your loads through market purchase for that 30% is you purchase a financial product that guarantees that your price will not be higher or lower than, say, either a fixed price of 25 mils or 23 mils or a cap and collar between 21 and 26. And so the net effect to you is that you know you will pay no more, nor will you pay less net cost of electricity than the price you've established through the financial instrument.
And the financial instrument would be a...
It could be called a swap, it could be called a cap, it could be called a collar. Some of them now are called...
It's a contract, right?
Yeah, it's just a contract. It could be applicable also, as in the case of the Klamath Falls cogeneration project that we're talking about here. The gas to fuel that project is going to be purchased through Pacific as an agent at market prices, and yet in order to offer power from that project at anything like an assured price, if you wanted to make a fixed long-term sale, you have to know what the gas costs are going to be, or at least what the range is going to be, or nobody will buy, so you'll go out and buy a financial instrument that will guarantee that the net cost to Klamath Falls of buying gas for the project will be no higher than X and no lower than Y.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Just so I can understand this. First of all, on the purchasing of the contracts, and apparently insurance policy, who are the market makers? Who are the providers of these contracts in this situation?
Well, you have really two kinds of brands and institutions that are doing it. One are just really banks. The others are
well, three, banks, commodity dealers, and or some larger private utilities through subsidiaries. So, and it depends on the form that you're doing it, but some of these institutions are very strong and very creditworthy. Others are not. In addition to that, there are now pure insurance type policies being made available by some of the larger insurers where they just say, they express it in the sense that we will ensure that your price will be no higher nor lower. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, a lot of the transactions are now beginning to take the form for the public utilities where they would buy power, for example, from the Bonneville Power Administration, and the price would be, say, 23 mils, but subject to an opener, where it might go higher, or they're buying power from Bonneville not at a set cost-based rate, but they're buying power on a market variation rate. And so when the public utilities do that, they then go to one of these financial institutions, companies such as Enron, Morgan Stanley, and there's a whole variety of them, and they buy in one form. They either swap the right to buy power on a variable price for a fixed price, or they just buy a financial instrument to make sure their price will not vary within the market. What has happened to cause big trading losses is that entities go out and they buy power on a pure market risk, reserving, both private and public entities, reserving X amount of capital internally against price spikes. But if everything goes wrong, you can have these spikes move from an expected range of 20 to 50 mils to where all of a sudden over a five-hour period of time it can be $500. And so these are the risks that a public utility operating on a cost basis and operating on internally set and projected rates, they need to be able to fix these cost risks within the parameters of the rates that they have quoted on a cost of service basis for a given period of time. But there are banks, there are swap dealers, there's a wide variety of types. It depends on how the transaction goes through.
My final question on this, Chair, is then my understanding is that the instruments that they would purchase for this would be limited to the service they're purchasing. So you mentioned, you used the example of 70 megawatts, and they need to go out and buy 30 megawatts. They'll buy a contract that will cover 30 megawatts. They can't go out and buy, like I say, on the open market, and this is a good deal. But let's buy a guarantee for 80 megawatts and see if we can make some dough on it.
That is absolutely right.
Okay.
You have to meet these three conditions the way the legislation is expressed to mitigate risks against electrical purchases, and the law makes very clear, at least in my view, the purposes for which a municipal or PUD utility can buy power.
Okay.
Would you ever use futures market in guaranteeing these things, or that part of the financial instrument?
The utility does not. The utility deals with an entity that will then take those rights and may take them into the futures market, but the utility does not. The utility takes a fixed range of prices or a set price, and that is the net result for them, regardless of how much money somebody in the commodity industry might make or lose in connection with holding or monetizing that contract.
Whatever they're doing the contract, they might go in the futures market.
They probably will.
Yeah. Heading there some.
Right.
Any questions? Sounds like a pretty complicated subject.
Actually, I think it is somewhat complicated, but it's made pretty, I hope, pretty clear here as to what they can do, and it is worth a lot to the retail customers that are served by these public utilities for them to clearly have the authority to do this. They pay a premium if there's any question under the law, which isn't right because I don't think there really is for these purposes.
A lot of this is being brought about because of the sort of the openness of the market, and there's more choices out there. That,
right. Generally speaking, before the wholesale markets were open, which they have been. The wholesale markets are simply open now. If you're considering legislation that would open the retail markets, the wholesale markets, as you understand, are open now. It used to be that if you're a public utility and you're going to buy 70% of your power, again, the example from Bonneville or some other fixed source, and you were going to go out and buy the rest of your power from some other supplier, it was fairly simple to get a contract for 23 mils for 30 megawatts or 25 mils or 26 or whatever. That doesn't work anymore now that the wholesale markets are open because, for a variety of reasons,
it is far, there isn't a lot of power being sold on that basis, and if it is, it's very expensive. So you go into the market, and then you use the financial instruments to get the combined lowest price. And we've learned that over the last 2 or 3 years. It's market is market, and that's where the process starts, and you either fix your risk or you don't. People don't take blocks of power and sell it very much at set prices anymore, and if so, you pay a premium.
Well, I guess I just heard about price per kilowatt hour and various things. I see what is an average price, or how much does that fluctuate in the market in these days?
Well, if you looked at today's prices, I guess you'd say that Bonneville delivered is about 23 or 24 mils. That tends to set a lot of the market in the Northwest, because they control about 40% of the market. If you look at the cost at bus bar of new thermal, efficient thermal generation, depending on how it's financed, probably 21 or 22 mils. If you go into the market at a given point in time, depending on the year and how high the hydro is, your expected market prices in the Northwest in a basic month would maybe run 20 to 28 mils in a variation subject to these spikes, which can move both ways. If a public utility or any other utility went into the market today, say in June, they might pay 1 mil and they might pay far more. I mean, there's a whole lot of variation. And the question, and again, the need for this kind of protection is that if over the next 10 years what you get into is a situation where there aren't as many plants built because the return isn't that high, or because the probability is that the less supply there is, the higher the price, it's a market price, then you may, over the next decade, as the market settles down, see a real need for this kind of protection. If everybody kind of settles into what plant will be retired, what plant will be built, and what price will you get. So,
it's hard to think of electricity as a commodity. It is a commodity, but that's what you're saying.
It's a commodity, and it's an essential commodity, so I just don't think anybody knows how the market's going to function. But it's that essential. I don't know that normal supply and demand things operate. No one does.
Further questions? Sorry, just want to know, what security comes with these financial instruments?
I'm sorry?
What, is there a security that comes with these financial instruments, or is there a...
No, there is a contract by which the supplier of the price protection says, and then confirms the price on the minute you close, in which they say that we will, for this amount of megawatts, guarantee that the price will be this or no higher than this or no higher than that. No one really knows how to classify them as securities or non-securities or whatever when they take that form. There is a contract. There is a financial instrument that states the terms. But they differ a lot in form. Sometimes they call them financial instruments. They call them swaps. They call them caps and collars. They call them derivatives. They call them all sorts of things. But it depends on the form of the... If all you're doing is taking... In effect, this contract by which you have a right to buy 30 megawatts from a supplier at a market price, and you want to switch it for this contract whereby another supplier says, I'll take that power and I'll give you this back at 25 mils, then it looks like a power purchase contract for the instrument that you receive. If what you do, in other words, though, is say, I'm going to go into the market to buy 30 megawatts at a market price delivered to Cobb, then they'll give you an instrument that says, well, when you do that, we'll guarantee the price will be 23.8 mils. And if the price at a given moment is 80 mils, they'll pay you the difference between 23 and 80. If, at the time that other powers bought the prices down to 6, you'll pay the 6, and you'll pay them the difference between the 23 and the 6, and that's what the contract says, whatever it is called.
And nobody defaults on the contract?
I'm sorry?
What keeps the parties involved default on the contract? I guess my question, Mr. Chair, is we heard the upsides of these financial instruments for public utilities.
Right.
I'm wondering about the downsides.
The downside is... I think the downside is that during certain months, if you go into the market, in all probability, if you buy one of these instruments that protects the price, you will end up spending more money than if you just would have been in the market. And of course, I suppose you would hope if the market is functioning right that there's about a 50% chance that you'll pay more and a 50% chance that you'll pay less. Otherwise, nobody'd be willing to buy them. But what you're trying to eliminate for reasons we've gone through from a public utility's perspective is that you'll go any higher. So a lot of them take capital calls. But that is the potential loss, is that you would have done better had you just taken the risk and stayed in.
Do the public utilities at any point hedge their not these contracts, any of the contracts on the futures market?
No. Public utilities sell power into the market or on a fixed price basis, and they buy power from the market and or the market plus a financially guaranteed price or hedged price. That's all.
So they don't get involved with that. It's that second group that comes in and they do hedging and they go out and get on.
Right. The people that hold the right to win or lose, all of the example we're just going through, they will then take that contract and maybe halfway through the month say, I can now get a bunch of money for that. But they're not relieved from the obligation, which goes back to why the dealer with whom the public utility has to meet needs to meet its risk management policies and be sufficiently funded to do this. So the market takes off from there, and there are swap transactions, and these are part of it.
When they deal with futures contracts, this is a little bit off the subject, but do they ever require delivery of the future contracts, like they would for like with cattle or wheat or something like that?
Well, the normal form of transaction is someone who holds the right to make or lose money depending on how the market moves under a contract will then either try to sell that contract as sort of a portfolio, or they will, within a certain investment guidelines, actually hold that and at some position maybe go long or short against the commodity itself. They'll double up on the market as against also and the financial instrument. But none of that. None of that. That may be private utilities that are well qualified and such may go into those markets and such. That's up to them. But public utilities don't. They want the protection that I've just.
Are they prohibited by law from doing that? Or do
public utilities?
Yeah.
In my view, they would be.
They are. Okay.
For a whole variety of reasons. Including the prescriptive investment statutes, and which say if you have surplus funds, you only invest them in certain things and all of that. I mean, yeah. But clearly, they're entitled to buy all forms of insurance and price insurance and all of that, and to buy and sell power into the market.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 3218 on the work session. Chair moves House Bill 3218 to the floor of the blue pass recommendation. Need any comments? Any objections? So ordered. And I think did you want to turn that to the next room?
Sure, I'll do either one, your choice.
Let's go to the next room. I was thinking of
that. At the risk of going eye to eye with Senator Hannon, I will challenge
you. You didn't want to do that, don't you? All right. Very, very well. Come in here. They're talking about getting a committee party together sometime next June, so I just want you to give a little forewarning about John Powell.
A warning of a party?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to get roasted.
Roasted, yeah. And who else is there? John Bellman are both going to put this on. I think it's about John Powell's house, and I think the second for
having a mobile home park.
if it hasn't been removed under the permissions of
SBCDA.
One that's well served by U.S., right?
Yes.
And it's past all buildings.